paralysis by analysis. That's what you get from the other guys. But not here. Not now. Not ever. This is the Baseball Insider Show presented by SEPTA, a deep look inside the game. The Baseball Insider Show presented by SEPTA is broadcasting live from Puss in Boots Tavern in Fairless Hills and is brought to you in part by SEPTA, BCWSA, Rob's Automotive, Vince Siriani and GMH Mortgage, Marriott Suites in Clearwater Beach, Harris Comfort, Penn Community Bank, McCaffrey Supermarkets, Peruzzi Auto Group, Keenan's North Wildwood, and the Southern Ocean County Chamber of Commerce. We now go live to Puss in Boots in Fairless Hills for the Baseball Insider Show presented by SEPTA. Now, here are your hosts, Greg the Bull Luzinski and John Brazier.
All right, welcome to the Baseball Insider Show presented by SEPTA. I'm John Brazier, and as you heard right there, I'm joined by my co-host today, Greg the Bull Luzinski. What's up, Bull?
Not a whole lot. A little disappointed in that game last night like everybody else. I stayed up to watch it, but kind of disheartening. I think earlier you were talking and said that Pete Buchanan said that was like worst defeat he's ever seen in his career.
And how many years has he been in baseball?
Well, he's been there a long time. You know the years, but let's see. Well,
Larry Bowa's been in it for 50 years, so Pete's got to be in it for.
It's probably Larry Bowa's worst one too.
Yeah, well, could you imagine Larry? You're a teammate of Larry, and you know Larry. Now he's settled down a little bit in his years, but what do you think he went through last night?
Well, knowing Bo, he's down to the cuticles on his fingernails.
Right.
But, you know, he takes it hard. I mean, there's it's like I know he's a coach and he wants to win. It's just the competitive edge, the competition with inside Larry. I mean, Larry's just that type of guy, and I'm sure he had a tough time sleeping last night.
I think any fan that watched the game last night, because, again, these West Coast games go late, so – a lot of people probably didn't get much sleep. They're probably yawning right now. Bull, we got a great show lined up today. We are here at Puss in Boots Tavern in Fairless Hills, PA. If you are in the area, please stop by and say hi to one of the greatest sluggers ever put on a Phillies uniform, Greg the Bull Luzinski. We will talk about this past week in Phillies baseball, including on the good note, a two-game sweep of the Marlins, but also the last two games versus the Dodgers. And, again, we'll get into last night's game. We will talk about the minor league system and tell you who's having a great season so far. In fact, there's a couple guys we talked off the air that are pushing at Triple-A some of the guys who are off to a bad start. Now, these guys, you really want almost 100 at-bats to judge someone's season so far, so you don't want to jump too much. But there's several guys playing down there. Plus, well, I don't know if you know this, but down in Single-A, we got these young, mostly Latino pitchers that are lights out. Four of our guys are in the top 10 in the league ERA. Again, these kids are like 20, 21 years old, so it's going to take a while for these guys to get there. But, you know, everyone knows the guys that are, you know, rising up in AAA, but there's a lot of arms especially and good young players down in the lower level. So we'll talk about that a little bit. We're going to go around baseball. We're going to talk standings. We're going to talk league statistic leaders. We're going to talk dirt bike injuries, right? That was a big one out in the NL West. We're going to talk about some power. Aaron Judge, how about this guy? Aaron Judge, I think he's 6'7", 250 pounds. New York Yankees, he set a record for most home runs by a rookie in April. You want to talk some Eagles today, too? They just wrapped up the draft.
It's your show. It's whatever you
want. We'll talk about the Eagles a little bit. And speaking of draft, how about the Flyers? That kind of went under the radar. I didn't even know they were having a lottery. And they had a lottery. I think the Flyers were supposed to be the 13th. Had the 13th record or worst record, but somehow they defied 2.8% odds, and they now have the second pick of the draft. Now, I was talking with Chris Ermer, who's a hockey guy here. I love hockey as well. So it's not a generational thing. There's no Austin Matthews. There's no Eichel. There's no Connor McDavid. But that being said, there's some studs, especially a couple guys, Nico and Nolan. You see, you can either get Nico, the Swiss guy, or you get Nolan, I believe he's Canadian, right? And his dad played in the NHL. So we'll talk about that. We'll preview today's game. It is the Major League debut of pitcher Nick Pivetta. How about that, Bull?
That's very good. Wasn't he part of a trade?
Jonathan Papelbon.
Papelbon trade. So some of these guys that we traded for are coming up and getting a chance and opportunity to pitch, and I guess that's all you can ask for as far as they're concerned. But this guy's supposed to have really good stuff. I thought Dickie Knows was on our show last week, and he talked about a lot of guys in the minor league system, and he was pretty impressed with a lot of people down there, and like you said, a lot of Latin pitchers that are coming up through the organization.
Yeah, it's when you talked about the under the radar, Ruben made a lot of these trades, and Klentak made some trades as well. But we trade away a player, a known commodity, a Marlon Byrd, a Ben Revere, a Jonathan Papelbon. You're getting guys back that are single A, double A, guys that aren't on the radar. It's not
right.
Like it's not like baseball has college football as a system or college basketball where you know these guys. You see them on TV all the time. They play for Carolina, UCLA. A lot of the guys we're getting, in trades are guys that came up, maybe were drafted as a high school kid or playing out, Fresno or playing somewhere where you wouldn't know. So if you think about some of these trades, now, as you said, Pivetta came in the Papelbon trade. So when we made that trade, people were saying, Nick Pivetta, that's all we got. We got some double A pitcher, and that's what we got for Papelbon. That's all we got. Well, you got to look down the road and look, Pivetta could be part of the future. Right now, he is 3-0 with a 0.95 ERA. He already has a complete game this year. Look at his stats bowl this year. 19 innings pitched, all in AAA, 12 hits, 2 earned runs, and here's the most impressive, 2 walks, 24 Ks.
Well, I think that's one of the big things for a lot of these young pitchers in our organization is the fact that their stuff's pretty good. It comes down to location, locating the ball where you want to put it, and when you start walking less people and give them those free passes, it just improves your game so much. But on the other hand, as a hitter, you're looking for more walks. That helps protect you, not protect you, but it keeps your average and on base percentage in a good position. But I think our pitchers would be fine. I think everything has to settle in, like you're talking about, Rupp and Joseph settling in at so many at bats, and hopefully they can get something going. But it's no different with pitching. I mean, because of our closer situation and Pete looking for a closer, he's rotated guys. And it seems like we get that one game or two games from the closer that we say, oh, boy, this guy, Neris, is going to be our guy. And then all of a sudden something like last night happens. So it'll be interesting to see if we get the lead again, if he brings him in for the third day in a row, Neris to be the closer if it's a close game.
He can't bring Neris in today, can he?
Well,
I mean, maybe it's just get him back out there.
Yeah,
get on the horse again. But
knowing Pete, I think he would.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, you got to find out what these guys are made out of inside.
Right.
I mean, obviously outside, somebody's seen their stuff and thinks they're qualified or should be big league, pitchers. So, you got to find out what's inside of them. I don't think there's any question in my mind to bring him back unless he's thrown too much in the last couple of days. Pitch wise, they want to protect him. He's still a younger guy that needs experience. But I think if he was sitting here and you'd ask him that question, he'd want to be back out there today.
Right, right. Now, again, Nick Pivetta making his debut. Do you remember your debut?
Let's see.
And what was going through your head during your debut?
Well, when I was called up, I was like 19 years old when I was up, and I think my first at-bat was in Shea Stadium.
This is 1970?
No, it was
1960?
What, 70.
1970, okay.
1970, and it was against a left-hander out of New York, Ray Sadecki, and I think he was throwing like a big-time game against the Phillies then, and went up to pinch hit against him after just being called up, and I think I was like his 15th strikeout.
Were you nervous when you got up there?
Not really. I think, yes and no. I wasn't used to pinch hitting. I was used to playing, starting the game, which takes a lot of pressure off you as far as the nerves go, because you're running in and out from the field. So, but I think everybody's a little nervous their first at bat. And I think one of the reasons, the experience of that a month and a half right there, the experience that helped me next year when I was called up to say, hey, I've been there. I was there one time.
Right.
The second time, you know, I played first base, and it was, hey, I'm looking at other players, seeing the pitchers, and I was convinced that, I could play in the big leagues. And I think that that's the one thing that guys have – you can say you can play in the big leagues, but then you have to be able to go out there and do it. And I think that's the situation with a bunch of guys here. Yeah, they have the ability to be there in the big leagues, but they got to want it, and they got to know they belong there. If they know they belong there – then they'll succeed.
So when you're getting called up, obviously you're seeing now a second level or a third level in the stadium, as opposed to playing in minor league parks where it's pretty much all one level. So when you have, you know, again, 40,000 people or 35,000 people in the crowd in your debut, if you can remember, did you just tune everybody out? You know what I mean? Did you tune the crowd out, or did you let that excitement help you?
I think that's part of the game. Is to be able to do that in situations, you know, your concentration levels to the point where you can have 40, 50,000 people in the stands, but you don't realize. I mean, you see them physically, but you don't really hear them. You hear them if you fail.
Right. You know, especially in Philadelphia.
I think that's kind of human nature that you hear them then. But if things are going good, I mean, it's not like they're going to dictate an at-bat for you, to be honest with you. They're letting their energy go, but you know, it sure it's nice to play in front of 30, 40,000 people compared to going to Cleveland when I was in the American League, and you'd be in that big stadium that holds 86,000 for football, and there'd be 15,000 people in there, but it looked like 5,000.
Right.
It looked like everybody was going to get a foul ball. So it's obviously more fun to play in front of people, but some guys, you know, some guys the crowds rattle. You've seen it happen in the playoffs with Bert and Hooten out on the mound. The fans definitely distracted him, and he kind of went off and ended up walking people and putting us back in a ball game. So you know, like you said, it can't affect people, but you get used to it if you succeed, you know, and you're in there every day, or if you're a pitcher every fourth day, reliever, you're going to get used to it and try to adjust just to the situations.
Now back then, it's things are a little different now. I think not just in sports, but in the generation now, it's a little more coddled. You've got to, you can't be as direct. What's the best way to say it? Hazing, like you guys did hazing back then. Like I know when I started 24 years ago, you know, the rookie players would wear outfits. Like they put them up in female outfits, feminine outfits, and now you can't do that anymore. Because I don't know, you're gonna.
Well, I never had to worry about that.
Yeah, did you have to wear any
no.
any kind of tutu?
No, I didn't. You know, and people ask me all the time. The closest I came to maybe being somewhat embarrassed on a field is when I got traded to Chicago, and I was worried about wearing shorts, you know, to play the game with.
Right.
Obviously,
that's right.
The great part about it is they got new ownership, so they banned the shorts. So
yeah, what year was that?
It was pretty good. That would have been 79 was when I think their last year they wore them, and I went over there in 80 and played the 81 season.
So did you, when you came over there, did you say, I'll play for the White Sox, but I'm not wearing those shorts.
I don't know how they did it, to be honest with you. You know, you slide and dive and do all that stuff, and your knees are kind of uncovered. So,
how long did that last for the White Sox?
Bill Veeck was the one that brought it in.
Of course.
Obviously, when I went there, it was Jerry Reinsdorf and Eddie Einhorn had the ownership of the White Sox. They were new, and they put those shorts to the side.
So you said Bull doesn't wear shorts.
That's right. Well, I wear shorts like Lee does, but not those fancy ones, but, you know, plain colored, you know, the old basic khaki shorts.
Right. But you're not going to wear them out on the base
path. Yeah, a short that goes with anything.
Anybody else, any other teammates go with you?
Yeah.
Did you have support as far as not wearing the shorts?
Yeah. They just got rid of them. They didn't like them. But I've seen pictures of them, and I played with guys that had them. And when I went to Chicago, and there's no way they liked them. You know, I guess even back then, more than today, it was the traditional baseball uniform, and this was something new. I remember the static that Charles Finley got when he started bringing in different colored tops and got away from the basic solid white and the gray and things of that nature. But
that was known in history as the worst uniform decision in any sport, probably.
Yeah, and now everybody's kind of gone to it. And the one thing I think the Phillies did was the powder blue uniforms that we wore. It was a different type blue and we wore on the road. And, you know, you hear people now even talking about why don't they bring those back. And I have no idea, but those were good-looking uniforms, especially for road uniforms.
All right, well, I'm going to go back to the office next week and suggest – we bring up those powder blue uniforms. All right, coming up on the show, let's go through the week in baseball. It was a short week because we had Monday off. We also had a Tuesday postponed, but got off on a good start with the Marlins and then tough last two games. You're listening to the Baseball Insider Show, presented by SEPTA, live from the Puss in Boots Tavern in Fairless Hills, PA.
We now return to Puss in Boots in Fairless Hills for the Baseball Insider Show, presented by SEPTA. Now, here are your hosts, Greg the Bull Luzinski and John Brazier.
All right, we are back to the Baseball Insider Show presented by SEPTA. I'm John Brazier, joined by Greg the Bull Luzinski. And Bull, let's go, before we go into the week of baseball, the Phillies baseball, I'm going to give you some breaking news. How about this one? Tough one for the Mets. Noah Syndergaard pitched 1 1/3 innings today, and he left grabbing his biceps as he walked off the mound. Now, if you remember, he was scratched last week. Because he had biceps discomfort, and he refused to undergo an MRI. He said, quote, I think I know my body best. I'm pretty in tune with my body, and that's exactly why I refused to take the MRI. Well, they not only let him pitch today, which, you know, this is coming off last week, but, you know, who knows? So I guess if you're a Mets fan, you got to be very worried because a serious injury to Syndergaard would be a really big blow to their starting staff.
Yeah, he's one of their leaders, obviously, pitch-wise. And let's face it, the Mets' offense was so-so, and they were pitcher Ernie Ball Club. And so, you know,
and now with Cespedes, too.
Now Cespedes is out, so that's a big part of your offense. And, you know, Wright's been hurt for how many years now, it seems. He's not consistent on the field. So, you know, it's going to be a big loss if he's out there a while. And, you know, that's the reason I think I read it. One of the writers was yesterday. Oh, they and in the Inquirer, there was a big long article, like on the second page, about was Andy McPhail talking. And Andy was saying how much pitching you need in the big leagues.
Right.
And one of the reasons being because of injuries, and you need those guys in AAA, you need those guys in AA that can step up and do a job for you. And I know when you think of the Mets, and it's been this way for a long time, you don't think of offensive ballplayers with the Mets. You think even way back when I pitched, you think about how pitching strong they were. And even right now, the same way. So that organization's always been that way. Hopefully here in Philadelphia we'll come up I think, you know, you'll talk about it later about some of the young pitchers we have. But one thing I still think is a problem, I know Hellickson is our number one, obviously. You know, he's 3-4-0 right now, but and he's pitching well. But we haven't developed the one in a long time, I think. And I mean long time, but you can just look back to Cole Hamels, which doesn't seem that long ago. But, you know, he was number one for a while here. He was our stopper, and you could consistently count on him for a great game. We need that to come out of our organization, a pitcher that can dominate hitters and be a consistent winner for us.
Do you know who the last pitcher that the Phillies have drafted that has won 20 games in a season?
No, Cole.
No, he never won 20 games with the Phillies.
No, I know that.
Chris Short.
Right. You're right. Chris Short.
Chris Short. So that goes back to your point.
I played with Chris Short.
But Andy McPhail's has said that you, and I, you know, no reason, I totally agree with him, is that you need to develop the pitching and you can always buy the hitting. And so he said you can never have enough pitchers in your system. And obviously when we get into, I'll get into our minor league system and talk about some of the young arms. You know, we're building, a stable of young arms. And some of these guys will burn out. Some of these guys will get injured. Some of these guys will exceed expectations. Some of these guys will regress. But you need a number. You really need that quantity. And then again, especially for our situation, from an offensive point of view, as we talked, this is the year we're going to find out who's going to play. Can Tommy Joseph get out of his slump? Can he be our first baseman in the future? Is Rhys Hoskins going to push that? Who's our catcher? Is Cameron Rupp going to emerge as, you know, towards what he was doing the end of last year, or is Alfaro or somebody below, Devi Grillon. Who's going to be our outfield? I mean, right now you look at AAA, everyone's saying, well, Cousins is next. Well, Cousins has, you look at his strikeout total, it's unbelievable. So this is a big year to find out who our guys are, and then the next 2 or 3 years, that's when you can buy guys, trade for guys. But sometimes even when you're trading for guys, you're almost buying for guys because you're taking a payroll,
right,
you know, off of another team. So it'll be really interesting. But, yeah, the Mets are a little bit of trouble right now, which I'm sure that a lot of Phillies fans aren't crying. But we'll see. All right,
you know, you're talking about buying and selling. And I think one of the unique things, to go back to the pitching aspect, and you're talking about, we were talking about McPhail, and I talked about the article. It was in the article he said he doesn't like to buy pitching per se with long term.
Right.
In other words, if I need this guy for, like, say, for instance, he picked up this year and he's hurt. Buchholz from Boston, but it was only a one-year deal.
Yeah, it's a low risk.
You know, it was a one-year deal. So what he's basically saying is I'm not going to sign a pitcher midway through his career or a little older for a long-term contract and see what he can do. Now, hitters, he said, on the other hand, are different. And a lot of teams feel the same way, that you can go out and, you know, find hitters or buy a hitter in the free agent market, or even maybe trade for one. But if you can stockpile that minor league system with pitchers, you're going to be better off. And tell you, I was an offensive player in the game, supposedly, and the one thing that I saw when we won in the 70s was the fact that we had a good defensive team up the middle, strong defense, yep, up the middle, and we had a good pitching staff. I know in 83 when I was with the White Sox, it's probably the best staff starting staff I ever played with, and there's no question we won 100 some games in, you know, 83, but pitching is the name of the game, and then after that you got to catch it. So you can always scrounge out a run here and then if you get those good pitchers.
Yep, and defense, as you said. All right, so this past week, Bull, we were off Monday, day off, and Tuesday was postponed because of rain. Wednesday, Phils win 7-4 over the Marlins. That's the game where Mikel Franco launched his second Grand Slam of the season. Also, Freddie Galvez and Michael Saunders added home runs of their own. Velasquez, who we'll get into a little later, got his first victory of the year. He allowed 3 runs, 6 1/3 innings. And we were talking off the air. The Velasquez overpowered hitters in his first 2 starts, but he rang his pitch counts up. And he couldn't go very long. And then eventually that, when he's getting a second or third trip, he's getting in trouble. So he's had 2 starts in a row where he's pitched pretty well. He's gotten to the 6 innings. On Wednesday night, he threw 19 first pitch strikes to the 26 batters he faced, which is a good sign. But Velasquez, I know obviously we're going to give him every opportunity to be a starter, but you were saying off the air that that our closer could be on the roster right now.
Well, I think that he will be a closer eventually for us. I think they're trying to find out from the starting standpoint what this kid can do. And I think from a baseball standpoint, and if I was to give my opinion, that you need a closer that can strike people out. And when you look at Velasquez's starts, other than maybe we talk about with control, is the fact that he can strike people out. He's got a strikeout pitch. He's got that good fastball with a little more giddy up to it that moves a little bit. And it's not the first time around that gets him. You know, it's been the second or third, and his control's hurt him in those situations. But hopefully he can put the ball where he wants in the near future here. And I think with him coming in those in the clean ninth inning, and once he starts getting used to it, I think he'll be dynamite out there.
All right, switching to offense, being a power hitter yourself, as I mentioned, Franco hit his second Grand Slam this season. Got off to a tough start in the beginning of the season, but what are you seeing in Franco this year? Have you seen some changes? You know, he seems to be going more the opposite way, going with the pitch.
Well, you know, he's obviously under better body control as far as his swing goes. And, there's a lot to be said for what he's doing right now. Don't forget, there's really nobody behind in the order that's hitting. So, you know, it's kind of pick your poison. I mean, there's a lot of situations where I know as a hitter you're thinking to be aggressive. You want to swing at strikes, obviously, but it comes to a point to – you know, that patience sometimes is lost because of the fact that they don't care if they walk.
Right.
I mean, it's like hit my pitch or I'm going to go out of the zone. And, you know, he's thinking being aggressive and he ends up swinging at some bad pitches or grounding out. I know he's hooked the ball or not hooked the ball, rolled over on quite a few balls at shortstop. And, you know, that's from just getting out there too far, too fast, and trying to be aggressive as a hitter. And when he's swinging good, it looks like the ball's going to get by him. And then all of a sudden, bang. And most hitters are like that. But, you know, I expect him to hold down the fort at third base. And there's a long way to go from here, obviously. But I think Franco is one of the guys you have the least worry about.
Yeah, it seems like he's got really quick hands. Right. I mean,
his hands are very quick. I mean, you know, he's got a good balance in his batting stance, his batting style. And I think where he gets in trouble is when he tries to be overly aggressive and then he chases.
Right. All right. Thursday night, Jeremy Hellickson, we talked about earlier, proved a 4-0, six innings of one run ball. Galvis continued hitting well. Galvis and Franco had two hits each. Brock Stassi, how about that six inning RBI triple? And one of the more exciting things was Saunders coming in, which ended up being the game-winning run. I thought he was dead out. I thought there was no way he was safe, and he made a great slide. He went to the side of the home plate and got his hand right in there.
He's a big man, too.
A very good – so Hellickson, I tell you what, you know, a lot of people are saying, well, we signed this guy to a $17 million contract, one-year deal. He's not worth $17 million, not understanding the whole process of arbitration, and we would have gotten a draft pick if he turned it down. We had the money to spend, so $17 million, yes, on the surface seems a lot, but
there's a pitcher. I mean, he's pitching right now.
He is pitching.
I mean, he knows he can't blow the ball by people.
Right.
And he hit spots, and there was a great pitcher for Atlanta. It started out in Chicago.
Right.
It was Maddox, and he's in the Hall of Fame, and he couldn't break that pane of glass, but he knew how to break that pane of glass by hitting it on the corner, and he just never went down the middle, you know, and he had good stuff. And so you got to give guys like that credit, and that's where your big league experience comes in against these hitters when you see the results of a guy like Hellickson.
He threw 35 changeups on Thursday night. And how about this one? There's all kinds of stats and all. You know, they're now – StatCast is basically anything is being analyzed and cataloged. He threw one pitch to the top of the zone all game.
Well,
one pitch.
That's part of his game. He's got to keep it down because he likes to move the ball. He likes to cut a little bit, and he'll like to sink it. You know, so he's got to stay down with those pitches. You start throwing 89, 90 mile an hour, and you get those pitches up, those eyes are lighting up.
Batting practice.
Yep.
Hellickson has a 2.61 ERA and 69 career starts against the Marlins. Stanton is one. Well, he was 1-for-15 versus Hellickson entering the game. He did get a double. He's 2-for-18 after the game. And how about – did you see the Angel Hernandez, who was the home plate umpire? Nava gets the ball. It looked like a close between trapping it or catching it. The third base umpire called it out. Phillies couldn't challenge. They showed it on Fanavision, and clearly Nava caught the ball. And I guess – I don't know if there's a rule or just it's kind of an unseen rule, unsung rule or unsaid rule that Hernandez looked up and saw and basically showed up the umpire because it was clearly a catch. Luckily, it didn't have any effect on the Phillies. But I don't know if you saw Hernandez look up. Either he thought Fanavision was behind home plate and he's yelling at Fanavision, not knowing that Fanavision's like above first base. But I guess he was yelling at our executives. So, again, I don't know if you're allowed to do that or not, but –
I don't think you are.
Angel Hernandez.
I think there'll probably be a note from MLB.
I think there will be. All right, coming up on the show, we'll talk Dodgers, and then we'll get into some baseball and talk some minor league. You're listening to the Baseball Insider Show, presented by SEPTA. We are live from the Puss in Boots Tavern in Fairless Hills, PA.
Serving you better than ever before. This is 1490 WBCB Levittown, Fairless Hills, Trenton.
We now return to Puss in Boots in Fairless Hills for the Baseball Insider Show presented by SEPTA. Now, here are your hosts, Greg the Bull Luzinski and John Brazier.
All right, we are back to the Baseball Insider Show presented by SEPTA. I'm John Brazier, joined by my co-host Greg Luzinski. We are Puss in Boots Tavern here in Fairless Hills, PA. Talk a little Phil's baseball. We went through the good. We talked about Wednesday and Thursday, which culminating in a 6-game winning streak. But then Friday had a tough one. Now, the good news is when we're facing the Dodgers, we didn't have to face Clayton Kershaw, but we did face Kenton Maeda. He struck out 8 over 7 innings. There's always one guy that kills the Phillies. Any generation, always. I remember back in like the 90s, it was always that Spider Lockhart from the, or someone like that, or Mark, it was a little Lemke. You know, from the, it was always those guys that are like, now this guy is not, you know, a role player. This guy is a solid player. But of all the stars on the Dodgers every year, year in, year out, it's someone like this. Justin Turner just kills the Phillies. He killed the Phillies last year. He's already killing the Phillies this year in a 2-game series. He had 3 hits, including a key run double off Luis Garcia. Garcia was sent down after the game. 6-game winning streak was snapped. Now, Eichhoff, who has been basically the model of consistency for not just this year, but even last year, he had a tough one. He was tagged for 5 runs. Galvis did go to his hit streak to 10 games. But the Phillies got off to a bad start. The first 2 runs, one was off a wild pitch by Eichhoff. The other just glanced off Altair's glove. It looked like he almost had it. It would have been an unbelievable catch. Only someone his size even going to be able to get his glove on it. But Eichhoff allowed 9 hits, season high 5 runs, 3 walks, 3 Ks. Still, he hasn't won a game yet this year, but his ERA is very respectable, 3.56 ERA. And 4 of those runs.
That's all you can ask for, John. He keeps you in the game.
Right. And 4 of those runs came with 2 outs, so it's kind of a shame. And how about this? Talk about debut. Mark Leiter, this is when you feel old. I came in 94, and I came in 94, and I remember Mark Leiter, his dad, pitched like in that, like 97, 98, somewhere around there, or early 2000. And I guess I kind of remember that kid running around the clubhouse, because every player has their kid running around the clubhouse. And now he made his MLB debut, the second father-son duo to play for the Phillies, other than Ruben Amaro Jr. and Sr.
I feel the same way. The Boone boys grew up in our clubhouse. And to think that, I played so long ago that they played in the clubhouse. They played on big league ball teams, and now they're retired.
And now their kids are playing clubhouse.
Right.
Right.
So don't feel bad.
But it was, he had a scoreless debut. So, I'm not going back to what you said. I don't know if he feels like he belongs, but, it's nice to kind of get that out of the way because, some guys, it can go either way. I know Nola, in his first start, had a great game. I think he got the loss, but he only gave up 1 run, and he gave up an opposing home run or a home run to the opposing pitcher. But if you remember Zach Eflin, he got rocked his first outing. So you never know how your first outing, whether it's usually one way or the other. Usually don't have it's either awful or it's great. All right, I guess we got to get into last night. I'll try to gloss over it. But last night, Phil's looked like they have in the bag. They got Neris on the hill, and then all of a sudden, Yasiel Puig, Cody Bellinger, second home run of the day, and Justin Turner hit back-to-back-to-back home runs, and it just unraveled from there. He was taken out of the game, and Rodriguez comes in, and again, there was a ball that the winning glove basically was by Gonzalez that deflected off Franco's glove for the winning run. So it was a tough time. It was a tough one for the Phillies. Big win for the Dodgers, but tough one. It's the fifth time since 1956 that a team has hit back-to-back-to-back home runs in the ninth to tie or win a game. Third time the Dodgers have done it. And as you said earlier, Bull, McCannon said it was one of the worst losses he's ever been associated with, the way we lost. And he's been in the game for 45-plus years. And you know what? You got to give Eflin, we talked about it earlier, Eflin gave up a leadoff home run to the leadoff hitter. But he settled down after that. He retired 21 of the final 25 batters, getting 12 ground outs in 7 innings. He still hasn't won a game yet, but he's got a 1.86 ERA after 3 starts. So I guess that's the encouraging part.
Well, no question about it. You kind of feel sorry for him. But, the thing Pete said was, we're talking about yesterday's game, obviously a tough loss, was the fact that he said Neris threw fastballs. And guess what? He went in there, what was the score, 6-5, okay. No. Neris came in, it was five to two. I think he changed his way of pitching to some of these guys all of a sudden because he had that lead. So all of a sudden he goes in the ninth, and instead of throwing pitching the way he was supposed to, using his best pitch, which is the split, you know, he got beat on fastballs, and he didn't get beat on his best pitch. He got beat because he didn't throw strikes when he had to throw a strike to get ahead,
right?
And kept pitching from behind. So, and he gave, basically, it's as a hitter, you'd say, he gave it into the hitter. You know, he didn't try to get me out with his best pitch. So I think he probably learned a valuable lesson there, and hopefully it doesn't happen again. Didn't happen since 56, so
right.
Hopefully it won't happen to the Phillies in the near future. If it does, we're swinging the bats.
Now, the good news is a guy who's swinging the bat well, not getting a lot of playing time, Andrew Knapp had his first career home run. Who was your first career home run off of?
Reggie Cleveland, and I guess I hit it.
I love how baseball people just know. I knew he would know that answer.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, football player, if you said, who's your first touchdown? But, yeah, baseball players know every little stat. So, Reggie Cleveland.
Yeah, in the vet, went in the upper deck. My first home run in the vet was the upper deck, which I kind of made a mistake. I just wish it would have gone over the fence into the crowd because everybody expected me to hit him like
that. He set the bar really high.
I set the bar high, yeah.
All right, then the other one is good news. Is Stassi had a three-run home run. That would have been the big hit of the game. And you know what's cool? When Stassi was the last one to make the team, everyone remembers the press conference he had. And he got teary-eyed. I thought it was a great moment. He kind of endeared himself to Phillies fans. I got a text that night from Vince Papale and said, hey, John, I love that. You know, I saw the press conference. I love that kid. I'd love to meet him. Can I come down to batting practice and introduce myself? I said, sure. So we set it up. It was last week, and it was awesome. Vince came down and brought him down to the clubhouse, brought Brock out. Brock was super excited. He hadn't seen the movie Invincible, but he knew the story. And knew Vince Papale. So he came out. He was really excited to meet Vince. Vince was really excited to meet Brock. Brock gave Vince an autographed bat. Vince gave Brock an autographed movie, and we had the press out there. But it was just a nice story. And the funny thing is, I brought Vince into the clubhouse to talk to a couple of the guys after that. And there's another guy who has as good a story. Do you know the whole Daniel Nava story?
I know he's been around a long time.
But you ought to hear, I might not get the particulars right, but I'm going to tell it in general anyway, because this is a fantastic story. So Daniel Nava right now is about 34 years old. Daniel Nava was 5'7" when he graduated from high school. He wanted to play baseball at Santa Clara. So he tries to walk on Santa Clara's team, but he doesn't make it. The coach sees him as too short. He doesn't really get the opportunity to play. And so he ends up being the team manager of Santa Clara baseball team. Well, I don't think he came from a background of money, and he really wanted to compete for his role in the team and possibly get a scholarship, but he couldn't get a scholarship. He couldn't afford to be the manager for the team. So he dropped out of college, Santa Clara, and he joined a community college team. Same thing. There wasn't really a role for him in the community college team. He took advantage of an injury. Next thing you know, he becomes a star. He grows a couple inches. And now Santa Clara is looking at him. Must have been a community college near Santa Clara. Well, now Santa Clara offers him a scholarship because he hit lights out. He grew up a little bit. And next thing you know, he's not only starting for Santa Clara, but he becomes the MVP of the team and MVP of the league. He gets drafted a high draft pick, not a low draft pick. And it was, you know, again, struggled his way to make it into the majors, did the whole minor league thing. And then he started getting some breaks. And sure enough, here's a guy who's now been in the league, I don't know, probably about 7-8 seasons, bits of going back and forth, but he's got a World Series ring with the Red Sox.
That's,
I mean,
right.
Talk about a real-life Rudy or a real-life Vince Papale. Like, that's pretty awesome that someone – and that just shows you baseball, it's all about persevering. Some guys are first-round draft picks, and they get the big bonus, and they're expected to. Other guys you never hear about, and they've got their own personal – you know, the ambition that's driving him,
yep,
for whatever reason. So it's pretty cool when you see a story like that.
Played with one of those guys, Larry Boa. You know, when you think about it, you think back, and everybody sees Boa now. I mean, you see how intense person he is. So he was a guy that made himself succeed, to be honest with you. I mean, he didn't even make his high school team.
He got cut from his high school team. Never played high school baseball.
So, you know, it's pretty incredible to say that he's one of the all-time Philly shortstops. And you see the way he caught the ball and played defensively. And believe it or not, Larry had over 2,000 hits in his big league career.
And a scout, now correct me if I'm wrong on this one, But it's Philly sent a scout to go see. He's out in Sacramento. They said, you got to see this kid. He's feisty, this and that. So the scout goes up, flies all the way out to Sacramento to see Larry Boa. And I guess the scout got there a little late, and he didn't even see Larry Boa play at all because Larry Boa got tossed from the game in his first at bat for arguing balls and strikes.
Oh, that sounds like Larry. Yeah, we got the right guy.
I love that one.
But, yeah, that was a bad trip for the poor scout.
Yes, it was. I hope he stuck around and Larry stayed in future games.
Yeah, in high school, I hope they had one the next day.
Right. All right, we talked about StatCast. Saturday night's game, I tell you what, Herrera has been making some unbelievable catches. And, again, they rank everything. They rate everything. There's not one stat that gets by. But they do a catch probability. And StatCast says if you make a catch probability of 12% or less, then they call it a five-star catch. And so far, oh no, 25% or less is a five-star catch. The probability that Herrera was going to make that catch Saturday night last night was 12%. It was his second five-star catch of the season, and he's been really unbelievable out in the outfield. And to think this guy was a second baseman, and he played – the only reason why he was left off the Texas 40-man roster was because they didn't think he had a position. He wasn't really a great second baseman. And they tried him in a winter league in Venezuela, and they put him in the outfield. And sure enough, one of our guys, Jorge Valandia, was a coach for that team and saw how good he played. And they said, you know, went to our Rule 5 guy and said, we need to draft this guy. So that's a pretty good find right there, another good baseball story.
Yes, it was Rule 5 draft, right?
Yep.
And getting an opportunity to play in the big leagues. The only one thing I'd say about Herrera is offensively, he's leaving a lot of ducks on the pond out there, especially in situations second and third. And I think he's a pretty good hitter, but he'd be even a better hitter if he'd kind of listen to Matt Stairs and play the ball in the middle of the diamond. He gets a lot of these infields that are pulled in, and he's not looking to hit the ball in the middle. He's not looking to drive the ball to right center, left center. He just looks to yank, and you talk about Franco with the hat off swing. Just think of Herrera does the same thing. You know, he takes those swings, and you wonder where they're coming from. But
they seem to throw those off-speed pitches right to his right foot, and he just corkscrews.
That's what happens when you guess a lot.
Right.
You know, you guess the wrong thing, you don't look too good. But, you know, his hands are quick enough. He's a good enough hitter. There's that old saying, see the ball, hit the ball. And especially in a lot of situations we get situations where we get guys on third base, and, there's too many strikeouts in that situation for us. You know, that's the put the ball in play type swing where you might have to shorten up your swing, shorten up on the bat a little bit so you can control it better and just look to hit the ball. It's like Matt trying to teach him up the middle, pick up that RBI. I mean, it's not every time you need a base hit to score that run. Sometimes it's just putting that ball in play to the right.
You never know what's going to happen when you put it in play.
Exactly.
All right, coming up in the show, we got a lot to talk about the last segment. We'll go through baseball, some of the news in baseball. We'll talk about the NFL draft a little bit. We'll go through the minor leagues. You are listening to the Baseball Insider Show presented by SEPTA. We are live from Puss in Boots Tavern in Fairless Hills. I'm John Brazier, joined by co-host Greg Luzinski.
We now return to Puss in Boots in Fairless Hills for the Baseball Insider Show presented by SEPTA. Now, here are your hosts, Greg the Bull Luzinski and John Brazier.
We are back to the Baseball Insider Show presented by SEPTA. I'm John Brazier, joined by the Bull. And Bull, we got one last segment, so let's get through a lot of stuff. First of all, Carlos Gomez became the 10th Ranger to hit for the cycle. How about that one? His cleats fell off when he was his first hit, getting a double. So he did it without a shoe.
Well, that was done in Texas, right?
Yep.
Yeah, that's a great ballpark to hit in. And triples are probably a little hard to get there.
Yep.
I mean, with my speed, it would have been. But.
Well, we talked about injuries with Syndergaard, going out today. So I'm sure if you're a Mets fan, you're crossing your fingers right now. Another big injury in the NL East was Adam Eaton, who is their big offseason acquisition. He tore his ace. I think he did an Achilles.
That's what I heard, Achilles.
Yeah, an Achilles, and he had a meniscus tear.
Wow.
So he's out for the year. That's a tough one.
Yeah, that was a big deal for them, too, and he's in that leadoff spot to set the stage for those big hitters coming up behind him.
Yep, so we'll see how that affects them with the Braves. Matt Kemp last night had 3 home runs versus the Brewers. And then something was cool this weekend was or is still going on. Chicago Cubs are playing the Boston Red Sox, and if you're Theo Epstein, you're feeling pretty good about yourself because you turned around two franchises. But last night at the Paradise Rock Club in Boston at 1 a.m., there was a Hot Stove Cool Music Benefit Concert. Eddie Vedder played for 2 hours. Bernie Williams, who's a classical guitarist, he performed. And Theo Epstein supposedly did a stage dive that night. So, and they auctioned off a cowbell that was played by Will Ferrell. So that probably would have been a good time being at the Paradise Rock Club in Boston. All right, we are talking off the air about the NFL draft. Bull, I did get a chance to walk around on Friday. It was pretty cool, the whole setup. I mean, they set a record, 250,000 people attended. First time the draft was held outside. The weather held up perfectly. Did you enjoy watching on TV?
Yeah, I enjoy the side shows. You know, when they go outside and talk to the people, or listen to a couple other radio stations, and they bring people in, and you can hear the Eagles chants, which, you know, they don't bother me, because if you're an Eagles fan, this is football's been very, very big in this town for how many years. I know baseball, was there at one time, especially when we win, the fans come out to support us. But you get 250,000 people out there, I would think the NFL's tickled pink, and from what I heard, it was very well organized. There wasn't very many unruly people, if any, and people were there to have a good time and represent the city, which I thought they did tremendously.
Yeah, the only unruly person was Drew Pearson, who I watched growing up, and you were I guess he was playing for the Cowboys and you were playing for the Phils.
Yeah, he sure was.
But he, you know what, I got to tell you, I'm a diehard Eagles fan, but I actually love that. I love the fact that Drew Pearson got up there and was all bold, talking about the five-time Super Bowl champs. You know, he's shouting out Jason Garrett and Jerry Jones. He thanked the Eagles fans for success and got a lot of boos. It was great to get the crowd riled up and, you know. And
is Jerry Jones a Hall of Fame owner yet?
I think he is, oh, right? Okay. Am I wrong?
I don't know.
But you know what Drew Pearson's job is? He books motivational speakers. He ought to start booking himself, right?
Oh, he probably has.
I guess he has. All right, so the Eagles draft, we'll go through real quick. That first pick, Derek Barnett, defensive end. You can't go wrong if you're drafting a guy that broke Reggie White's sack record at the same school.
No, there's no question about that. I'm an SEC fan, and seen him play, you know, a few times. I become, because of my granddaughter going there, a Roll Tide man. So I've seen him play quite a few times, and I think the SEC is a pretty dominant conference. And like you said, when you can break a record like I think 33. Supported quarterback sacks. I mean,
in that league,
you got to be doing something right. And you got, you know, so hopefully the Eagles file themselves a defensive end.
And they rolled the dice on the second round draft pick, getting a guy who tore his Achilles back in March during pro day. But if he hadn't hurt his Achilles, he would have been a top 15 pick. Easy. Well, when it might have been the top defensive back taken.
Obviously, that's when your scouting system comes in. And they had tremendous reports on him, and so did other clubs. Now, maybe other clubs weren't in that position to be able to do what the Eagles did, but hopefully he doesn't come back too fast to do another re-injury, because we've seen Ryan Howard with an Achilles tear that really hurt his career. So, and I think Ryan probably rushed it back.
Yep, and he's a big man too. So if you're a West Virginia fan, our buddy Scott Nichols got to be happy, Greg, because they got a cornerback, Rasul Douglas. They also got a really fast receiver, Shelton Gibson. They got another receiver from Carolina. And you know what? They have the they drafted the all-time NCAA record holder in yards, Donnell Pumphrey out of San Diego State. They say he's very Darren Sproles-like. So what a good team.
No, he's not very big.
Not very big, but
What? He hides behind those guys.
You know, he's got to be doing something right.
Yes.
And you know what? He's got Sproles now to help mentor him, right?
I'm sure he saw Sproles play, because Sproles was out in San Diego, so obviously he probably saw him play at some time years ago, and maybe that was one of the guys he modeled himself after.
Yep, and then they also got a safety who they're going to convert to linebacker out of Nebraska, and they got Elijah Qualls, who there's a great story on Qualls, just talk about how he got out of Sacramento. He was living in the gang area, and three of his friends were shot on the day when he was supposed to be with his friends, but he persevered, and now was the last pick for the Eagles, Elijah Qualls. All right, that is that. We talked about the Flyers getting a second pick in the NHL draft. Let's move back to baseball. Minor leagues, I'm going to give some stats, some of the guys that are playing well. Let's go bottom to top. We'll start with Clearwater. No, let's start with Lakewood, because Lakewood has a guy. The second base position, Bull, is full. They got this guy, Daniel Brito, 19 years old. He's hitting 340, three home runs. Mickey Moniak's already off to a good start, hitting close to 300, four stolen bases. But remember some of these names, because these names, Lakewood, Ranger Suarez, 0.81 ERA. Nick Fonte, 2.08 ERA. Adonis Medina, 1.71 ERA. Jojo Romero, 2.75. And the guy who's probably the most ballyhooed of all of them, Sixto Sanchez, 3.77 ERA. That is in Lakewood. That is low single A.
And that's, I think isn't Sanchez like 19 years old?
Yeah, and they're all these guys are pretty much 18 to 20 for the most part. Then you go to Clearwater, which is high single A. You got Cole Irvin, a draft pick, 1.04 ERA. Franklin Colome, 2.28 ERA. Tavares, 1.59. Tirado, who we got in the Revere trade, 2.38 trade. Sir Anthony Dominguez, 0.95. And Brady Quinn, 2.87. So you've got all those guys, young arms. And again, young. So we'll see. In Reading, we'll move up to Reading. The big stars there are Andrew Pullen, who's a guy that was left off the 40-man roster, could have been drafted by anybody in the Rule 5. He's hitting 360 with five home runs. He was in camp for a long time with the Phils. Carlos Tochi, who seems like he's been in our organization for years, he's hitting 328. And then Scott Kingery, who had the great spring training, hitting close to 280 with six home runs. And then we go up to Lehigh Valley, who's some of these guys are pushing the current guys. We talked about Alfaro hitting 348 with three home runs. Reese Hoskins hitting 342, six home runs. And then some other guys.
That's a big ballpark, too.
It is. Not as big as Reading, right?
No, Reading's, I think, a little smaller, to be honest with
you. Yeah.
But I think AAA is designed just like our ballpark outlay,
right?
As far as distances go.
All right. Well, Bull, a lot of things to look forward to here at, in the Phillies. And I appreciate you coming by. That wraps up today's.
It's gone by that fast.
It's gone by that fast. That wraps up today's Baseball Insider Show presented by Scepter. I'd like to thank my co-host today, Greg Luzinski, our on-site engineers, Chris Hermer, Bob Giaquinto, and back in the studio, Jack Urban. Thanks to the good folks here at Puss in Boots Tavern for hosting us today. We'll be back next Sunday at Xfinity Live for a special broadcast from 1 to 2 before the 2:35 game versus the Nats. We'll be dedicating our show that day to the Darren Dalton Foundation. We'll have several of Darren's teammates on the show. Please stay tuned for Phillies on Deck with Jim Jackson. Have a great week, and as the great Harry the K says, we are out of here.
You've been listening to the Baseball Insider Show presented by SEPTA, an exclusive presentation of 1490 AM WBCB, and heard around the world at WBCB1490.com.